It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Alrighty then, it is a minute past the hour on this 13th day of December 2018. This is The Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us when you go to the interweb tubes. That's where the magic button is that says chat room that will send you immediately upon choosing a password and screen name into the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza. That is the chat that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you pick out the aforementioned screen name, if you pick out the aforementioned password, if you dive into the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza, you will be met and greeted warmly, like family even, by Anatole, Hoghead, Laurel, Otto, VT Blom, more who will wander along shortly, because we don't have a tardy bell here. And you'll be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator and present sufferer of a head cold. Sorry about that. Sparky, who, although he is a spacing guild master, has not folded space to become man cave because, well, space folding is the number one way that head colds are transmitted among the spacing guild. You'll also be moderated by pinch-hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgia Stan. And making a guest moderator appearance this evening, the one and only Brother Deacon Asa. That's a lot of moderating. I'm there, too. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, by Jove, here. And I got a feeling we're going to have to get the tweezers out just to get all the stickers out of our little tender feetstuses. Not fetuses, feetstuses. Because we have some real live, legitimate, no kidding, dumbassery going on. And hatefulness and misogyny and you'll find out. In some cases, it's all in one matter. Yeah, as far as thanks go out, this is the lonely 13th. The 13th of the month has absolutely, well, only one pair of subscribers, and that, of course, is our dear friends Gary and Gaia out in Oregon. They'd love to have some subscriber company this day of the month, and if you'd like to be a subscriber, just run over to headon.live, click on the contribute button, click on the PayPal button. The PayPal button's right there on the main page, too, by Joe, I think. Isn't it? Yes, it is. How about that? So is the Patreon button. So is the mailing address for folks wanting to help keep the program on via the United States Postal Service. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley 25801. It's right there at headon.live. And if you'd like to be a subscriber, well, once you click that PayPal button, it will take you immediately to the PayPal interface, and all you got to do is check that little box that says make this happen every month, and then, lo and behold, Gary and Gaia would actually have some company on the 13th of the month. And speaking of Gary and Gaia, they have graciously extended their challenge to become the Lonely 13th of the Month challenge. $50 on the table to help us knock down this persistent fundraising deficit we've been dealing with since the beginning of the month. The fundraising goal this evening is $602. And that means that if Gary and Guy's challenge is met by five people at 10 or 10 people at 5 or, five new $10 a month subscribers over there with the clicking and the box checking and the whatnot, then they will double your money. The first $50 that come in get doubled. Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Gaia. Thank you so very, very much indeed. It is genuinely much appreciated. That's where it stands. And hopefully it won't stay there all night, because the idea of having an $802 fundraising goal tomorrow is, it's the kind of thing that kind of makes you wonder, hey, after all these years, are we going to be here in January? Hopefully, yes. Hopefully we will. But it depends on keeping everything lighted or lit, as it were. Yes. So that's out of the way now. Off into the brambles. Oh, yes. Thank you for letting me know, Randy. Randy says, I can no longer play the White Rose Society HQ horn stream on iTunes on my Mac, Bob. The low-Q stream still plays. By the way, I miss the embedded players on the new site. Well, there is a player on the new site. First, it'll play automatically when you go to headon.live. Or you can set it up so that you have to turn it on, but the embedded player is right there at the right there under the photograph, under Listen Live, alongside my Twitter stream. You can, if you want to follow on Twitter or whatever, my tweets are right there by the embedded player at headon.live. There's even a link you can click to listen on TuneIn. Now, as for what the HQ stream on White Rose is doing, I got no idea. There are a couple of things I do here, and once I do them, I have no control whatsoever. The White Rose stream behaves as the White Rose stream behaves, and I have absolutely no control over it at all. But the headon.live stream, well, it's golden. So there you go. But I'm sending. What TuneIn's doing or what White Rose is doing, that I got nothing. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. Off into the... Randy says, by the embedded players, I mean the ones that you can download as a song to iTunes. The HQ stream is bouncing up and down like a yo-yo. Again, factors beyond my control. Thank you very kindly. Steve in New York says, tune in is golden on my end. Thanks. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. So off we go. And, there's a bunch of leading opportunities to grab a handful of thorns. Oh, yeah, lots and lots. But let's start with this. There was supposed to be a hearing yesterday over in the still run by wacky, zany, merry, madcap, Looney Tunes Republicans House of Representatives. Well, thank you, Robert. I, God knows I'd love to. Robert in Australia says, move to Australia. It's all good here. Oh, I don't know. If I did and I tried, then Frontier would probably, even at that great distance, try to find a way to screw me over. You'll have that. Thank you. Thank you to Don in British Columbia. I'm listening to the HQ stream on iTunes now, so it seems okay to me. Hi, Don. Hi, Bob. Thank you. Good. Well, maybe things are going to settle down. Because, truth be told, and this is just off in the weeds, this is some serious night baseball. But I think part of what happens is the server doesn't respond well to the command. See, I have to switch from one sound card to the other in order to send out the stream live like this versus playing back a rerun. So when we switch from the rerun stream to the live stream, that may cause some sort of weird-ass conflict with the White Rose server. That's my only guess. But the only thing that would be a remedy to that would just be to play last night's rerun and not do a live program. And somehow I don't think anybody wants that. Now, they were supposed to have a hearing yesterday in the House of Representatives, and they were going to have a witness on to talk about how evil the minimum wage is. How bad it is to have a minimum wage. How the free market in its tender mercies will pay the wages that each person deserveth. And we won't have no job-killing government regulations in there a-messing with our freedom to work for less and less money. Yeah, they were going to have a real good time doing that. I imagine that all manner of birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, deathers, birchers, booger eaters, and maggots were fairly licking at their rabid foaming chops in anticipation of that hearing. But then, well, it didn't happen. It didn't happen because of one of the witnesses who was supposed to testify in that hearing, a fellow by the name of Joseph Sabia, S-A-B-I-A. And Joseph Sabia, who holds himself out to the public as an economist, is apparently a man with a curriculum vitae that extends far beyond the mundane aspects of what is referred to as the dismal science. Yeah. Joseph Sabia, it appears, is a culture warrior. Oh, yes. And shortly before he was due to testify in front of the House, some writings, we'll call them writings, turned up. Like this, that he published on August the 5th, 2002. Get the hockey puck. We're off to the hockey puck early this evening, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, aunts and uncles, kitties and cousins. Take a couple of trips around with the duct tape to make sure that you don't disturb the neighbors, because you will be hooting like a barn owl. Sherman set the Wayback Machine for August the 5th, 2002, back when Joseph Sabia was 16 years younger than he is now, a right-wing activist. It finally happened. On July 26th, 56-year-old Caesar Barber filed a lawsuit in Bronx Supreme Court against Wendy's, McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, and Burger King. August the 5th, 2002. My, those were our halcyon days. I can almost hear the wistful peeps of the calliope now. August 5th, 2002, we were still shaken from September 11th, 2001. But we weren't quite to October 2002 yet in the full-on run-up to the faked-up, frauded-up, rubed-up, dummied-up, ginned-up war against the innocent people of Iraq that would wind up claiming the lives of a million, oops, forgot some zeros, a million or more innocent men, women, and children, and maybe even some fetuses, again, at the hands of George W. Bush and Count Dicula, who had never done a blessed thing to anybody in the United States. But the Republicans killed him anyway, because Republicans. But those were the Halcon days, and Joseph Savia was writing about a man suing fast food joints. His claim, he writes, they said 100% beef. I thought that meant it was good for you. I thought the food was okay. It's all fat, fat, and more fat. Now I'm obese. The fast food industry has wrecked my life. Yes, those were the Halcon days. I don't think Super Size Me had even been released yet, although the ad hoc Horn Research Department can check me on that. Well, Joseph Savia, economist, upon informing the wingnut world of, the lawsuit by Caesar Barber, who then was 56, and if he's still around, is 74 now. Well, Joseph Savia says, Barber, and now listen, this is the love and compassion of what was back in 2002 termed compassionate conservatism. Barber ought to be taken to the gas chamber to be hanged. People were taken to the gallows to be hanged and taken to the gas chamber to be gassed, but, well, let's not quibble, because Joseph Savia is a patriot. Barber ought to be taken to the gas chamber to be hanged, but the recent Supreme Court decision prevents the execution of stupid people. Hence, we have to live with the likes of Barber and his sleazy, greasy attorney, Samuel Hirsch. The agenda for liberals, of course, is the same as it was when they went after the tobacco industry. You remember, the poor put-upon tobacco industry that never hurt anyone, that tobacco industry. First, demonization, second, regulation, and finally, taxation. Leaders on the fascist left. God damn it, Joseph. Leaders on the left aren't fascists, they're commies. Your side has the fascism. Learn your political continuum, please. Leaders on the fascist left are already referring to fast food chains and junk food manufacturers as big fat. The Simpsons have already parodied attacks on big sugar, so why not? God, this was about the time that, as we learned toward the end, this is only 4 years removed from the time, as we learned at the end of last night's program, that poor Kellyanne Fitzpatrick was singing drunkenly into a microphone, I've got the pundit blues, I've got the pundit blues. Through a straw I drink my rot gut booze, I've got the pundit blues. Stop singing, Bob. We're 602 bucks in the hole. Suing high fat food manufacturers is no different than suing tobacco companies. Taxing the products produced by each of these industries rests on the premises that, one, consumers are unable to make choices for themselves, and two, a central government knows how to make these choices better than individuals. Why is there an urge by elite policymakers to tax fat? First, of course, they will use any excuse to advance socialism. Now, God damn it, make up your mind, Joe. Are we advancing, are we over here on the wild-eyed left advancing socialism or fascism? A minute ago, we were fascist leaders. Now we're social. Jesus! It's enough to make your head spin. First, of course, they will use any excuse to advance socialism and diminish personal liberty. Sit, Liberty, sit. Fundamentally, these people believe Americans are all morons like Caesar Barber, and that only elites can protect us from ourselves. You know, elites. People with brains. Those elites. Second, fat consumption has been shown to lead to bad health outcomes. Heart attacks, diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. All of which have affected the 5'10", 275-pound barber. Really? We're going to do the measurements, too? Policymakers do not believe that individuals can rationally choose to trade off the benefits of eating fatty foods with the risk of future bad health. No rational person would eat a steady diet of fast food, they say. So for a minute, if you've been listening for the past few minutes, you might think that this was a column about fat and fast foods. Well, it isn't. Because, in fact, this guy who was going to testify yesterday as an economist in an assault on, you know, the minimum wage, the name of this column by Joe Sabia is Tax Gay Sex. Oh, shit. Matt in San Francisco just stomped on his brakes. Yeah, roll the windows up, Matt. Yeah, don't let the neighbors hear. Tax gay sex. So, when last we checked in with Joseph Sabia, we socialist fascists were trying to advance... oh, Jesus. The truth, he argues, is that ordinary Americans eating fast food offends the sensibilities of the arts and croissant crowd. And for them, the mere fact that it offends their sensibilities warrants their taking away our personal freedoms. Yes, yes, in an America without nasty, fat-laden hamburgers, mass-produced, sad little gray discs sizzling away on a griddle... Well, life's just not worth the living. Unless you're Joseph Sabia, and you want to talk about something else instead. Right-wingers attach an amendment. I humbly propose that right-wingers attach an amendment to every bill that taxes or regulates tobacco or high-fat foods. The right-wing amendment should tax... and regulate homosexual acts. Homosexual activity has been responsible for devastating health outcomes, deadly HIV, hepatitis B, and various other sexually transmitted diseases. When two random men get together and choose to have sex, you know, I'd suggest that they weren't two random men. It sounds to me like they're probably two gay men or... at least one gay man and one Republican off on a right-wing convention somewhere. There's not an insignificant risk of infection and death. You know, just like that poster said when I was a little boy in the barber shop. It burned itself into my brain, and it's obviously it stays with me to this day. I'm sitting there on the little booster seat in the barber shop. I got the little thing around my neck, you know, the cover, the sheet, the shawl, I don't know what you call it, but it clips around the back of your little maybe 4-year-old head neck, and there right in front of me, because I was already reading, there was a sign, and it was a sign that had these little things in a little tiny tube with a little tiny lid on it, and it said, and it looked kind of metal and cylindrical, and the legend on the cardboard display stand said, "Do not pull nose hairs, may lead to infection and death." I think that little cardboard cutout did more to get more little boys to stop picking their noses than any admonishment by any school marm in the entire school system there where I was growing up. Because... that's a hell of a thing to foist on a 4-year-old. Do not pull nose hairs. may lead to infection and death. Of course, four-year-olds don't fully understand that the whole nose hair business isn't going to really kick in until the hair on the tops of their heads stops growing and starts growing instead inside their ears and noses. Because that's a thing that happens. But it's, according to Joseph Sabia, it's the same thing. In gay sex, because just remember, the whole time he's typing here, he's thinking for all he's worth about some big, hot, muscly, buff, chiseled, oiled, gay dude having sex. And of course, Joseph Sabia is not in any way gay. He just thinks about that sort of thing. In gay sex, we have an activity that is clearly leading to disastrous health consequences. What rational person would engage in this sort of activity? There's only one solution. Let's tax it. Come on, Sabia, you say. How are you going to enforce these taxes? Are you going to send government officials to peep into everyone's bedroom? Eventually. But first we have to mount. See, this is what happens. The assault on big gay. Now, this was 2002. And you can tell that his words got around because that's one of the phrases that is most fondly used by proud, helmet-headed son of Stanford, Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan. How many times have we played clips in which we've heard Brian Fisher under his helmet head blather on about the depredations of big gay? Well, here's the origins of big gay in August of 2002. Big gay clearly lures people into trying their product without discussing the risks to mind, body, and soul. The average Joe on the street. Really? Average Joe? I think somebody's getting a little too far into his own hypothetical. Does not understand all of the possible bad outcomes. I can almost hear him now. They said 100% hotties. I thought it meant it was fun. I thought gay sex was okay. Now I have all these diseases. Big gay has wrecked my life. In the immortal words of Warren G., regulators, mount up. Oh, goddess of irony. We will have to sacrifice yet another rubber chicken at midnight this evening. A guy, a good God-fearing, rock-ribbed Republican, conservative economist, hooting about taxing gay sex and then saying, mount up. Well, now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's that. But sadly enough, that's not all from Joseph Sabia, who fancies himself, I suppose, the man with the plan when it comes to fixing societal ills, in addition to being an economist. Matt in San Francisco. Tax? Will this be broken down by the act itself? Hand job, 0.05%. BJ, 0.0875%. Random, 6.4%. Known or married, 0.001%. My brain hurts. Will we be monitored? Body cameras? Alexa? Well, I mean, Alexa for the lesbians, obviously it'll be Alex for the guys, but, yeah, I know. I didn't get that far into my research, Brother Deacon Asa. Question, says Brother Deacon Asa, you mentioned that article was written in 2002, and it was. Has the gentleman been caught with a gay prostitute in his mouth since? Well, I don't know, but we can certainly hope. But then again, I guess we can assume the answer is no, because he never would have been allowed to, or never would have been invited to testify to such an august body as that group of insane maniacs known as the Republican-controlled House of Representatives. If he had. Ron in the far frozen north. I can't remember the specific articles in the Uniform Code of Military Justice, says Ron, but at least one of them concluded with the words, penetration, however slight, is sufficient to complete the offense. Now, there's a factoid you probably didn't expect to receive today. Well, no, I didn't expect to receive that. I didn't know it was in the Uniform Code of Military Justice, but it is a typical holding in even civilian rape cases. So, yes. So I guess that would trigger that would trigger the taxing scheme by Joseph Sabia. But it's not just the big gay that economist Joseph Sabia, who was all set to tell us how the minimum wage would surely eventually one of these days kind of sort of destroy the economy of the United States of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now today in the universe forever under God. No, he was worried about someone else. In fact, he was worried about these people first. Because this came from March 2002. If you were to visit a women's studies department at an elite university, there's that word elite again, you'd think a guy with like some sort of highfalutin economic credentials would maybe even consider himself elite because, well, he would be. But no, he's just a regular Joe. Remember, he was talking about regular Joe in the other column. Gets a lot of fiber, Joe does. That's why he's so regular. If you were to visit a women's studies department at an elite university, you would encounter a wide variety of courses on the sexual liberation of women. The main thrust of these courses is that for too long, various social institutions have prevented women from exploring their sexual desires. Now, thanks to the heroism of such women as Gloria Steinem, Margaret Sanger, and Bella Abzug, women have been partially freed from the oppressive forces of male patriarchy. And then a one-sentence paragraph. In other words, young women are encouraged to be whores. I guess I should probably let you know that the title of this column by noted economist Joe Sabia is College Girls. Unpaid whores. Yeah. It may only... The thing is, though, this may be 2002, but it reads like 2018 as far as the Republicans are concerned. The chant of Gen Y college babes might as well be, we're here, we're whores, get used to it. No, most girls are not actually uttering those words, but the slutty sentiments are implicit in the standard female college behavior, wearing tight shirts and pants, getting publicly drunk, hanging on every guy around, except Joe Sabia, which is what I suspect motivated this, and engaging in... da-na-na. Random sex. Oh, well, you know what? That's a good observation. Ron in the far frozen north says, by the way, the overused word patriarchy is starting to piss me off as much as ponerized. Remember that old trope? Well, yes, of course I do, because obviously, Ron, you've been ponerized. Mm-hmm. I'm off and running and driving Alexander a little bit around the bend. Brother Kincaid, what in the fuck does big gay sex have to do with paying someone a fair living wage? That white boy is crazy as hell. I know. Jack in Shreveport, subject line, Joe Gay Dreamer Sabia. Come on, the objective isn't to write an article that makes sense. The objective is to write something that includes as many words and terms as possible that the MAGA types have been conditioned to have negative responses to. Oh, yeah, I guess Joe thinks all them smarter than government folks each have their own individual labs and research budgets to get data to base all them rational decisions on. I know. Yep. So let's get back to The concept of behaving like a lady is an anachronism. If a college girl acts like a lady, she is considered boring, prudish, and old-fashioned. Why is this happening? Five important explanations come to mind. One, feminist thought has taught young women that equality is achieved by acting like promiscuous sluts. Two, young women have turned away from God. Three, the costs of sex have rapidly declined. The explosion. And see, you know, we talk about this from time to time. The ultimate goal of the white wing in this country is not the elimination of the right to choose via Roe v. Wade. It is the destruction of Griswold versus Connecticut, which established the right to privacy that is involved in using contraception. Contraception. The explosion in availability of the birth control pill fueled the so-called sexual revolution of the 60s, the consequences of which we still see today. With the ability to partially regulate the probability of pregnancy, women can choose to have sex more liberally. Number four, marriage has been devalued by young women and replaced not only by cohabitation, but also by new bizarre social arrangements such as friends with benefits. Once again, Joe Sabia is really, really jealous. Where is my friend with a benefit? Well, you know, maybe if you weren't a right-wing turd, somebody might be interested in you, Joe. And you wouldn't, let's see, 5 months later, be sitting there clacking away at the keyboard, fantasizing about gay sex. Sex. Do I have a big nose, Mum? Sex. That's all you ever talk about. Is it too big? Is it too small? Will the girls like it? Right. Number five, you know exactly who's to blame. The mother and the father. The Oompa Loompas in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Yes, this is noted academic economist Joseph Sabia citing as support for his argument that all young women are whores. Remember, that's the title of the piece. The Oompa Loompas. You know what? That's true. David in South Carolina, Stan, points out Big Sugar. Big Sugar sounds like a sex worker or cartoon character of a sex worker cartoon character. It does. Big Sugar. And you can prefer you can imagine whichever gender you prefer. Yes. Many moms want to be their daughter's friends, talking late at night about boyfriends, parties, who's hot, etc. Young women do not need more friends. They need mothers who will provide moral guidance. Did it ever occur to Joseph Sabia that those mothers at some point in time had sex and that's how they got the daughters? Unfortunately, these self-absorbed moms cannot deal with the fact that they are old and will never again see their early 20s. Thus, they attempt to live their sorority days all over again through their slutty daughters. Then he goes after young men, but not nearly as much as young women. And he works, and by Jove, he works a little bit to gay in it, too. It should surprise no one that sexual activity has historically been more frequent among gay men than among heterosexuals. This is because there is no civilizing female force in the gay community. Hey. Man, I picked a rotten day to quit sniffing glue. Darlene in Connecticut with a question. Are men ever to blame in these sexual scenarios? Just asking. Well, no. Men are powerless in the face of the feminine wiles of slutty college girls in 2002, who are now, let's say she was graduating in 2004. Okay, so she's 30. The women he's writing about here are 38 now. Dear God in heaven. And they're probably raising more slutty girls. You know, this is written long before there was ever a women's march. This is happening back when Donald Trump really was grabbing women by their genitals. At one point, Joseph Sabia says, "But first we have to mount the assault on Big Gay." No, I'm not talking about Rosie O'Donnell. Holy. We can tax gay nightclubs, websites, personal ads, sexual paraphernalia, and so forth. We can cripple gay-related industries and get them right where we want them. All gay clubs will have to feature huge flashing warning signs like, "Caution, entering this nightclub may increase your chance of contracting STDs and dying." And just as a reminder, the only reason we're talking about all of this madness is because Republicans in a committee in the House of Representatives thought that this guy would have been a great witness against the minimum wage. That's a good observation. Marty says, Dr. Joe Sabia is clearly the godfather of the incel movement. That's probably more true than, yeah. Wow. But again, not so wow. This is just Republicanism. This is the big Republican tent that is big enough to hold Newt Gingrich and Donald Trump and Joseph Sabia, and big enough to hold 52% of the white women in America who voted in 2016 for people. Well, Donald Trump and Nod and Tisk Tisk. Yeah. Now, let's not do his work for him, Steve in New York. Say, gay-related industries. Shall we tax florists, hair salons, interior decorators, dance studios? And you know, that's New York, and thousands of miles away on the West Coast in San Francisco, through the miracle of broadcasting, we've got further perplexion from Matt. So now I'm uncivilized? Well, how can I be taxed if I'm uncivilized? If this guy really needs to do research, he can check X-Tube, Grindr, or Scruff. Scruff? I'd heard about X-Tube and Grindr. Scruff is a new thing. Well, thank you for furthering my cultural education, Matt. At least I've got that going for me this evening. He's confusing regular bars and clubs with sex clubs. I've never been out on the dance floor next to men having sex. Well, there was that one time. Yeah. I know. Was that back in the Barry Manilow playing piano for Bette Midler era? Well, I mean, I've heard. Brother Deacon Asa says, "I'm afraid I have to agree with Mr. Sabia here. Big Gay is, in fact, responsible for the proliferation of STDs in the same manner that Big Longitude has fueled the spread of flat eartherism." Wait a minute. That's the kind, you know, that's the kind of analogical thinking that gets you a real high score on the law school entrance exam. It's not too late, Brother Deacon Asa. James in Illinois, gay-related industries? How do you suppose he defines industry? Don't ask. There's probably a column if I went and looked for it. But don't take Joseph Sabia's word for it alone. Oh, heck no. There's other stuff out there, too. There is, for instance, the woman who writes at the blog called The Transformed Wife. The Transformed Wife. And let's do the cipher. This is 13. A scant 8 days ago. Although they probably weren't 8 scant days to this woman, because that would be filthy. The following, in 2018, because I'm trying to draw a line here that shows that, well, Republicans have been this way for a good goddamn while. They were this way when, say, Newt Gingrich was saying, oh, my stars and garters, I cannot believe that Bill Clinton got oral sex from that young woman, Ms. Lewinsky. Not now, Callista. Put your clothes back on. Callista, please, someday you're going to be ambassador to the Vatican. What would the Pope think? Yeah. But a scant 8 days ago, even if the scant sounds a little bit filthy, the transformed wife wrote, why are women so offended when told leggings are immodest? Now, see, over here on our side of the ideological divide, we would answer that question. Remember, this is Thorn in the Side Thursday. These are all just things that make us go, we would answer that question by saying, because it's none of your goddamn business, lady. Quit trying to impose your religious puritanicalism on people who are not interested in participating in it. Yesterday, my post was about leggings being immodest. Maybe we'd better check that out. Telling girls to dress modestly is not shaming them. According to a feminist flash mob, telling junior high girls not to wear leggings is shaming them and promotes a rape culture. I can tell you this makes zero sense to me, and these women have no wisdom. They are foolish women. How does telling young girls not to dress immodestly shame them and promote a rape culture? I have no idea. A feminist tweeted, rape cultures, when we tell 13-year-old girls they can't wear leggings because it's distracting to the boys. 13-year-old girls need to be taught that what they wear affects boys. It's the difference in the way God created the sexes. So, to go back to what Darlene asked a few minutes ago, are men ever to blame in these sexual scenarios? Well, no. Because Eve. Because, talking snakes and shit like that. Gossipy Gabon vipers, chatty copperheads. The feminist solution is asking why they should make girls cover up instead of teaching boys not to be gross sexist pigs. And boys need to respect women no matter what they're wearing. I'm sorry. No, you're not. But it's not shaming women to tell them to dress modestly, to be virgins until marriage, and teach them to be feminine, all the things the Lord requires of women. It's speaking the truth in love to them. Leggings are immodest. Now, I live in a place with a pretty vibrant, especially for a place like Appalachia, culture of health and athleticism and activity. It's even inspired me to get off my pale white ass and get moving around a little bit. And I like I miss the warm weather because it was fun, you know, just working up a sweat and not like that. But there are a lot of women who, like, run the trails around here, and they tend to do it in leggings. Or when the weather's warm enough, running shorts. Because it's really hard, really difficult to go out on a nice 5-mile trail run in a fucking hoop skirt or a June Cleaver dress or a burka. Jesus, I don't want to ever hear some white winger decrying the way Islam treats women when, as long as the transformed wife. Who transformed her? And into what? A Stepford wife? A grown-up children of the corn? Yeah, leggings are immodest. They're tight and clingy and show every curve. Men and even teenage boys are attracted to women's bodies, regardless of how much the feminists want to reinvent and tell men how they should act and what they should prefer. What right do they have to demand that men change, yet they can act, dress, and do as they please? Someone sounds a little, you know, a little LSJ. Now, Eunice, don't be putting those leggings on and going out in public, you know. You know that God does not approve. I am the only one to see your naked form, for I am your husband, and you shall submit to me, etc., etc., etc. Whiskey Tango Hotel Foxtrot. No, Hotel Tango Foxtrot. Oh, I get it now. Hotel Tango Foxtrot. Do women dress modestly during exercise or just casually? Assuming that writer is actually a woman, just call her Aunt Lydia. Well played. Well played, Marty. Mm-hmm. This is some serious Aunt Lydia stuff. And so, yeah, it's not just feminists telling men how they should act. It's a general societal standard that maybe we should ask men not to be so quite so goddamn rapey. Okay, not rapey at all. How about that? God did not give this command to be modest to men because he knows that his men who are more visual and women are more apt to dress immodestly to attract men. So, I mean, that was 9 days ago, and because I guess she got some traffic off of it, this idiot posted the next day, "Why are women so offended when told leggings are immodest?" This caused an outcry among women, and many were offended. Women are offended whenever I write about leggings being immodest, so I asked the wise women in the chat room why they thought this was the case, and here are some of their answers. Leggings could be modest as long as they aren't worn as pants. Leggings are not pants. They're just warmer pantyhose. They're undergarments, not outer garments. Oh, for fuck's sake. Ron in the far frozen north says, why do I think that if Aunt Lydia wore leggings, it would look like two piglets fighting in a sack? Well, that was just sexist, Ron. Funny, but sexist. Yeah, a buddy of mine from Southern West Virginia used to use the term a pair of bobcat cubs fighting to the death in a burlap sack. Ooh, burlap leggings. Debbie said because they are wearing them and don't have correctable spirits. Hmm. I'd hate to see what happened. And when we get behind closed doors. Debbie gets corrected. You need some correction, Debbie.
because they're wearing them and don't have correctable spirits, they are rebellious. And I'm talking about ones that wear the butt shapely ones uncovered. Butt shapely ones? I thought, wait a minute. I thought butt shapely was a character in a Mel Brooks movie.
Yeah.
Michelle said, I think there are two main reasons. One, pride. And two, they're being asked to consider men's feelings. And in our current society, it seems that men are expected to sit down, shut up, and let women do as they please.
No, in our society, men are expected not to be all rapey. That's what men are expected not to do. Men are expected not to judge women based on the way that they're dressed. Men are expected not to grab women by, but 52% of white women in America said, go ahead. I'm guessing I know how the transformed wife and the wise ladies in the chat room vote, don't you?
Kathy, with a C, said, I think it's because leggings are in style. They're cheap and comfortable, and so many women wear them. I also think most women do not feel a sense of personal responsibility, as in not causing a brother to stumble.
She doesn't mean brother. She's being all biblical.
And generally lack a sense of modesty. And then Cheyenne chimed in. Like the answers above, pride, and they want to do what they want with no regard for men. A wise woman once taught me in my teen years to dress the way I want other women to dress around my then-future husband. The problem I'm seeing with this is that apparently some women don't care if another woman causes their husband to stumble. And it's not the stumbling that other women are worried about. It's the raping, and the grabbing, and the groping, and the pinching, and the fondling, and the catcalling, and the whistling. Women who don't mind causing other husbands to stumble are being... See, the husband's just stumbling. He's not cheating or anything. He's not completely disregarding his own marriage vows. No, some
inconsiderate legging-wearing, buttly-shaping... It's her fault.
I know.
And there it is, the magic word David in South Carolina stand conjures it up. Subject line, Jezebel spirit. It's the Jezebel joggers, of course. Oh, wait. Yeah, you get one of those, David. Darn straight you do. Megan, who being female, has a valid point of view on this. Bob, I had a supervisor who thought women should be covered up to their necks every day, even in our 100-degree-plus weather in the summer. These women don't understand that it's hot, and we dress down so as not to get heat stroke that comes with wearing a freaking turtleneck, sweater, khakis, and nurse shoes to work every day. As for working out, wearing loose-fitting clothes means getting caught on equipment or branches, depending on where you're working out. Tight clothing also reduces chafing. Blisters are a bitch. Yes, and let's add to that. What are they called? Flat-locked seams? They cut down on the chafing, too. Not a lot of flat-locked seams in the Victorian bustle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like I said, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we have here a reminder that all of our problems do not come home to roost solely to Donald Trump. We largely have the Republican Party to thank for most of this. And by the way, going back to subject line, Red Forest, David in South Carolina stand, says, you know,
Melanie should have gotten a gay interior designer for the White House Christmas design instead of putting up the Red Forest in the White House. Oh, I imagine there were howls in the interior designer design world for her Red Forest sort of Aunt Lydia Christmas trees. Darlene in Connecticut, a story from Huffington Post. Serena Williams makes history as first woman to ever wear cornrows on Teen Vogue cover. Darlene points out, our culture is soaked up when it comes to women. Juxtapose what you're talking about with this headline for Teen Vogue. Kudos to the gorgeous Serena, and what does this say about Vogue? I'm guessing what you're talking about, Bob, doesn't even scratch the surface about how this culture views black women and women of color generally. I'm guessing you're right, and I'm surprised somewhere along the way. I don't make me go over there and start scanning the posts at Transformed Wife. It's alive! No, because, yeah. Jesus. And, well, let's keep going with a few other worthwhile stories. I bet you didn't know there was a place in West Virginia called Mineral County. Well, there is. It's not even down in the southern coal fields. It's up right by the Maryland line. Pretty country. It's a little bit of the Blue Ridge. And they've got them a circuit judge up there. God, well, this is one of those days we ain't getting any relief. So a group called Fairness West Virginia sent out a survey to the judges in this state to ascertain how many judges are not discriminating against gay couples seeking to get married. Because in a lot of instances, because of the nature of the religion industry in socially conservative place like West Virginia, it's sometimes difficult to find a minister of the gospel of some sort willing to perform a marriage ceremony for a same-sex couple. And so a lot of those couples rely on, because, of course, it's not a religious ceremony, it is a civil ceremony. And they rely on the likes of circuit judges and magistrates and whatnot to do the marrying. Well, Fairness West Virginia wanted to know how many judges were performing civil marriage ceremonies in their courtrooms for gay couples. This goes back to October 25th, but the story only broke in the last couple of days. And what it boils down to is that they found out that up in Mineral County, West Virginia, there was a circuit judge there who refused to perform weddings, wedding ceremonies for gay couples. There was a phone survey that Fairness West Virginia did, circuit judges throughout the state. And it turned out that this one particular judge, a fellow by the name of Lynn Nelson, is the only judge who admitted to discriminating against same-sex couples. West Virginia has its own sister court, Kim Davis, in the form of the Right Honorable Lynn Nelson. And so after he said, "No, we, I don't do no weddings for no." A member of Fairness West Virginia got in touch with his judge and office up in Kaiser, West Virginia. And the clerk there said, no, he only performs wedding ceremonies for opposite-sex couples. And so Fairness West Virginia then filed a judicial complaint with the Judicial Investigation Commission against Judge Nelson. And the Judicial Investigation Commission looked at it and said, no harm, no foul. No biggie. So what if a man who sits in judgment of everybody in his circuit, be they gay or straight, so what if he discriminates against gay couples? No biggie. We're not going to bother him. Why would we put him to such inconvenience? Well, there was a remedy. In response to the complaint, by way of reaching a compromise with Fairness West Virginia, Judge Nelson said, fine, I won't marry anybody then. I won't marry straight couples. I won't marry gay couples. I won't marry anybody. Which, of course, is no solution. Because now, when straight couples go to Judge Nelson to get married, he'll say, no, I'm sorry. I can't marry you because of the damn homosexuals. They got all upset that I wouldn't perform their disgusting wedding ceremonies, so I can't marry you either because of big government and big gay. Which, of course, then in turn foments hatred against the gay community in this state. And you're going to love this part. Judge Nelson said, "I've dealt fairly with them in adoption proceedings and criminal cases and civil cases, but my religion prevents me from getting them all married." Well, son of a gun, I had no idea that a circuit judge in the state of West Virginia or anywhere else in this country was clothed with religious powers. It's against my religious beliefs, Nelson said. I've allowed same-sex couples to adopt children in my courtroom. I've given them their children back in abuse and neglect cases. On divorce appeals, I've handled them just like everybody else, but I'm just not interested in getting them married. The Supreme Court told me I don't have to marry anyone I didn't want to. Nah. He really should not be on the bench. He really should not be on the bench. Because he's admitted that he has a religious bias against gay people. Now, this isn't some pissant county clerk in Round County, Kentucky. This is a circuit court judge who holds the power of life and death. Well, okay, we don't have a death penalty in West Virginia. But if he is religiously biased against gay people getting married, how can he be unbiased against a gay defendant in a criminal case? Or how can he be unbiased for a straight defendant who, say, tries to stomp the life out of a gay person
up there after, say, a wild Saturday night in Kaiser, West Virginia. Andrew Schneider of Fairness, West Virginia, said, it appears the judge is willing to deny this service to everyone so as to avoid providing equal treatment to gay and lesbian couples. Private citizens like clergy are free to choose who they marry or refuse to marry, but public officials must treat everyone the same by law. Nelson is the only one who admitted openly to his bigotry. On the other hand, in Ritchie County, Wood County, Wayne County, and Gilmer counties of West Virginia, no judges perform any marriage ceremonies at all, regardless of the genders of the people seeking to be married, because they apparently have bigots on their bench, too. Now, you might tend to think, so what, big deal. In West Virginia, little old tiny West Virginia, in 2017, there were 2,800 same-sex couples. How about that? And by the way, according to a report by the Williams Institute on Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity Law and Public Policy, same-sex marriage would add something like $9 million to the state economy and generate up to 80 full-time jobs. But the Judicial Investigation Commission said, don't worry about it. When in fact, the appropriate answer is resign, retire. He's been on the bench, I'm sure, long enough to have and judges in this state have a magnificent retirement. They retire at something like 2/3 full pay. And they get paid in excess of $100,000 a year by the taxpayers. So in this case, Judge Nelson gets $100,000 plus a year to discriminate against people based upon who and how they love. Disgusting. A note coming in, a little correction coming from Cynthia. Hi, Bob. Busy doing chores and listening, but I had to comment. It's not Melania or Melanie or whatever. It's malaria. P.S. with thanks to Nicole Sandler's husband for that nickname. Meanwhile, I guess Trump is going to go back to his fireside crook book. I got that from the reference Boris uses to plot against Moose and Squirrel. Thank you, Cynthia. Oh, thank you. Thank you. What's that, Arthur? Arthur says, sounds like somebody's religion doesn't allow him to do that job. If I were a vegan, my beliefs wouldn't allow me to work at a meat packing plant. I wouldn't demand that the packing plant start processing tofurkies. There we go. That was a good one, Arthur. Arthur always brings the A game. Ron in the far frozen north notes, for what it's worth, my good wife is a lay minister affiliated with the United Church of Canada and a wedding officiant. She's done over 400 weddings over the past decade, and I would guesstimate that over half of them have been same-sex weddings. One of those ceremonies was performed on Halloween in full costume. That sounds like a fun wedding. That judge would be laughed out of town up here. Oh, well, just another day in West Virginia. Kind of like last night after, being lost for about 4 days. Oh, hold on, let's just work through this. This was mentioned in the chat room earlier. And this will end the West Virginia news portion of the program, for the most part.
But the West Virginia stupid stories are the ones that go deepest into my pale pink hide. So, two women, were out four-wheeler riding down in Raleigh County, which is adjacent to this county to the south. That's where Beckley is. And they's riding around the hillsides and whatnot. And that is when they decided to go down the air shaft of an old abandoned coal mine. Where they then promptly got all stuck. Yeah. And trapped even. And so the sheriff's deputies and mine rescue services and God and everybody got involved in trying to save them and get them out. Well, they were rescued yesterday. And it turns out, according to reports, that no, they weren't just out toddling around the hillsides on their four-wheelers. It's apparently one of those things that's known in certain circles, let's say among the Crystal Methodists, that when a coal company abandons a coal mine, they tend to leave a lot of stuff behind in the way of wiring and whatnot. And these people were tempted, they went down that mine in hopes of bringing out a whole shit ton of copper. Every once in a while, every year or two, you'll have a story, say, about some methed up hillbilly who will, you know, get a few bajillion joules of electricity run through him trying to steal copper there at the substation. Well, there's no power running into these mines anymore. So there's no risk of Cletus getting himself zapped. But instead, well, they got trapped. Trapped in an old abandoned Pittston-Powelton mine. Because I guess you can just go down the air shafts. What the hell? Seems like rather an attractive nuisance to me. But they've been saved. I guess so they maybe they can go and try it again or move on to bath salts or something like that. But after it was all over, one of the local news channels set up a camera outside the ER, and lo and behold, out comes one of the Cleti. Got a blanket around his shoulders. It's cold outside. But he had to get outside to smoke. Oh, sorry about that, Steve. Steve says, don't say Cletus, Bob. She starts scratching my leg. No, Cletus is such a good little girl. Well, all right. Eustace. So he's having his cigarette, and one of his buddies standing there with him says, hey, there's a camera pointed at us. Now, this is a guy who spent 3 days with a couple of women in an abandoned mine, presumably trying to steal copper, for whom massive amounts of public effort have been expended. So what does he do? Well, when he finds out there's a camera looking at him, he and his two buddies turn around and they flip the middle finger at the camera. Yeah, boy. Hew. Skew. Yeah. Right. Hmm. By the way, going back to Judge Nelson up in Mineral County, Stephen, New York, asks the question, has anyone ever asked one of these Christian judges if he's ever married previously divorced couples? Well, as a matter of fact, this Christian judge is Roman Catholic. And he himself admitted that he has participated in gay divorces. So I guess he approves of that, but, well, you know, Holy Mother Church doesn't. Going back to melanoma, malaria, and the Handmaid's Tale trees, Matt in San Francisco says, subject line, White House trees. Bob, now I like the red trees. Any decorations that make me feel like I'm at the hotel with Jack Nicholson in The Shining is appreciated. Good old Overlook Hotel. Damn straight. Well played. Well played, Matt. Oh, thank you, Tom. With the Lonely 13th Challenge on the table, a note from Tom in the Bay Area. A little something for the Thorns. $50 going in the mail this evening. So that challenge has been met. And that takes our fundraising goal for the evening down to only $502. Thank you. Thank you, Tom. Thank you so very much, and happy holidays to you. I cannot tell you, well, they haven't really tried to cipher it up, but you've saved us a bunch of money with that gizmo for filling the little propane cylinder thingy. That was huge, and I really can't thank you enough. Oh, my God. Well, that would have been enough to send me to the rot gut bottle. Kelly, with a note, says, I heard a guy on Fox today say Trump was the orange Fonzie because everyone loves a bad boy. Wow. You know, if he had, like, some sort of 70 or 80% approval rating, maybe that would work. But as it is, he kind of sounds like the orange Ralph Mouth, because he was without a doubt the least lovable character on Happy Days. He probably had approval ratings in the 20s, too. Breaking news, courtesy of Otto. Final vote on the Lee Sanders Murphy resolution to pull America out of the immoral, disastrous Yemen war, 56-41 in the Senate, a historic day. Now, if only we can get the House to do the same. Yeah. So it's 22 minutes past the hour. Let's open up the phone line, see what's on anybody's mind. If you want to jump in, here's how. 304-574-8178. That gets you into the Skype line. Of course, there's also Skype on the same computer. Bob Kincaid Horn, if you've never sent me a contact request, feel free to do so, and we'll be conversating before you even know it. Then there's the stress line, which is 304-640-2829, or 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN. And that gets you. So we got two lines. You know, you can fill. You can do with them pretty much as you please. And if you got something on your mind, well, if there's a thorn in your side, a burr under your saddle, or a bee in your bonnet, well, don't let it stay there. Get it out. Get it out, I say, out. Oh, sorry. One other thing. Yeah, but I said we were at the end of the West Virginia stories, but we're not. No, of course not. Warning advisories are going out to West Virginians this evening, because I guess you have to warn West Virginians about this. 'Tis the season, and scam calls are ringing in to various West Virginia telephone numbers, in which a person on the other end of the line will ask for money in return for, wait for it, prayer. They're being referred to as scam calls. But if that's the case, then the Attorney General's office, and this is, of course, notorious right-wing tool and evangelical fundamentalist lickspittle, Patrick Morrissey, if asking for money in return for prayer is a scam, then he might not want to be worried about what's going out over the phone so much as what goes on every Sunday in every church in West Virginia. West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey is urging people to exercise caution when receiving unsolicited pay-for-prayer calls. Those choosing to solicit consumers in such a manner have been known to utilize robocalls, websites, and unsolicited email to exploit the consumer's desire for prayer. Consumer? There are prayer consumers? Well, in West Virginia, sure, why the hell not? The caller portrays him or herself as representing the St. Mary's Prayer Center Ministry, which doesn't exist. Consumers must exercise caution with any unsolicited call, said Morrissey. No matter the service or product, consumers should never provide payment or personal information to a stranger without verifying the legitimacy of the represented entity, even in church on Sunday. No, I added that part. So, yes, in West Virginia, it actually works. You can randomly call people, ask them for their credit card numbers, and then tell them in exchange for their money you will pray for them. I'm thinking that's kind of genius. Because what, say, elected prosecutor in the state of West Virginia is going to ask a jury of 12 tried and true to convict someone for the notion that it wasn't a real prayer? After all, the defendant can get on the stand and said, well, we prayed for them. They gave us a generous donation. We prayed our little palms smooth for them. Had them clasped there right in front of us. Dear Jesus, thank you so much for causing Emery and Marveline to give us that $1,000. Thank you, Jesus. Jesus, we're calling on you now just to bless Emery and Marveline as they sit there in their matching Barca loungers there in the trailer park. Oh, Jesus, bless them. Bless them. Get them out of that single wide, Jesus, and into a double wide. Oh, Jesus, we just thank you so much, Lord. We praise you, and we know that good things are going to come to Emery and Marveline. And then the prosecuting attorney is supposed to look at those 12 jurors tried and true and say that ain't real? Well, that's a prosecutor who's not going to win her next election is what that's going to be. Yeah. Damn straight. So anyway, light up the phones if you want to. That's certainly not all I got, but I think that is the end of the West Virginia stories. But if you've got, and I'm sure if they're doing it in West Virginia, they're doing it in Arkansas, and they're doing it in Alabama, and they're doing it in Mississippi, Stan, let folks know that pay for prayer isn't real unless it's like Pastor Gray from the Relentless Church who's really going to pray for you to give him money because he's got a $200,000 Lamborghini Urus to pay off for his wife Avocado, who only got him an $8,000 Rolex. Okay. So we're halfway through the program. We'll take a little break now because, of course, it being a Thursday and all, we've got the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Let's see what those wacky, snarky kids are up to.
It's Thursday, December 13, 2018.
The Arctic is experiencing the most unprecedented transition in human history.
Very bad news in the latest Arctic report card. Coal State Democratic Senator gets top Energy Committee position. Washington State Governor unveils ambitious climate change legislation. Plus...
Well, I want the cleanest air and the cleanest water on the planet. I want crystal clean water.
Trump EPA rolls back yet another major water protection rule.
All of those rollbacks and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
When you look at China and when you look at other countries where they have very... you know, foul air. They have not good air.
Yes, we know what foul means. You are a really not good president. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I think you understated it. I think it's not very bad news in the Arctic. I think it's very... very bad news in the Arctic.
Okay, we'll take it. The Arctic is in bad shape, and that has global consequences in faster sea level rise, faster global warming, and more extreme weather. That's according to the latest Arctic report card out this week, an annual update on changes in the Arctic issued by NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. NOAA finds that the Arctic has lost 95% of its oldest, thickest sea ice, which is severely impacting land and marine species. 2018 will likely be the second hottest year in the Arctic after 2016, and the five warmest years on record in the Arctic have all occurred in just the last 5 years.
Just to be clear, you said that 95% of the old Arctic ice has been melted.
Right. In a press conference, NOAA scientist Emily Osborne explained that what happens in the Arctic doesn't stay in the Arctic.
What we're seeing is that the Arctic is warming at twice the rate as the rest of the globe. That results in a change in the pattern of our jet stream, and the jet stream is impacting our weather throughout the year.
Impacts include extreme weather that stalls in place, like record drought in the west, or extreme rainfall events like Hurricane Harvey. The rapidly disintegrating sea ice is also attracting shipping traffic and mining interests to the region, and therefore more pollution. The Arctic now has more microplastic pollution than any other ocean basin. Report co-author Don Perovich summed up the dire report.
One of the big takeaways from this year is it really shows how interconnected things are, how the Arctic is a system, and we're really starting to see cascading effects that we don't fully understand.
Not only cascading effects, but feedback loops. As the white ice disappears, it's replaced by darker water and land, which absorbs heat from the sun instead of reflects it back.
And that, in turn, creates even more warming that melts even more ice.
Right. This is very bad.
In other news, the Trump Environmental Protection Agency this week proposed rolling back yet another major Obama-era public health standard, the Waters of the United States rule that protected waterways and wetlands that feed into the drinking water supply of one-third of Americans. It was aggressively opposed by Republican state attorneys general and some folks in the agriculture, real estate, and oil industries, and golf course owners like President Trump.
Huh.
In a press conference, this is how Acting Administrator Andrew Wheeler characterized the Obama standard.
They claimed it was in the best interest of water quality, but it was really about power. Power in the hands of the federal government over farmers, developers, and landowners.
Also, an EPA spokesman claimed that the agency had no data on the impact of the rollback, but E&E News, via a public records request, obtained that data that doesn't exist, showing the agency determined 20% of streams and 50% of wetlands would lose protection under the new rule. This is a proposed rule. The public comment period is now open at regulations.gov. And it will likely face years of litigation.
Good.
In the United States Senate, Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer has granted the top spot on the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee to Joe Manchin of West Virginia.
Bad.
A major supporter of the coal industry and the committee's highest-ranking member, this after midterm election losses forced a committee leadership reshuffling. As climate activist Bill McKibben put it on Twitter, quote, "Yes, we have to change everything to deal with climate change, but no, that doesn't include seniority rules in the Senate."
And putting Joe Manchin on an energy committee. You know, for all the complaints about Nancy Pelosi, why aren't Democrats complaining about Chuck Schumer in the Senate?
Finally, there is some good good news. Washington State's Democratic Governor Jay Inslee this week unveiled an ambitious package of legislation to tackle climate change that includes phasing out fossil fuels like natural gas and coal from the state's electricity supply by 2045. There's no carbon tax or fee included in the governor's proposed legislation. That's after the oil industry spent $30 million to defeat a state carbon tax in the November election.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide, please, on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
About 25 minutes before the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday for the 13th of December, 2018, thanks going out to Anatole. Thank you, Anatole, very, very kindly. We're now down to $482 to go to get even with, not get even with, I'll get you, sucker. No, to come up to where we need to be at the end of the program, $482 to go. If everything stops right there, it'll be $682 tomorrow evening for Friday on the Front Porch. But $482 is where we are now. Let's see. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob, Ron in the far frozen north. I'm not gonna let Ron in the far frozen north hog all the Ron space. Did you watch 12 Monkeys on Sci-Fi? No, I didn't, and I hadn't really planned on. But my not quite 3-year-old iPad went to its long home today. It's been a tough 13 days of December for computers here at the Horn. And that's usually where I do most of my DirecTV viewing, is on that iPad, because it's kind of comfortable there. Agnes and I can set it on one of the other's laps and have, you know, screen time together. But no, I didn't see that. But Ron tells me one of the running memes in 12 Monkeys on Sci-Fi was the Red Forest, which presaged the coming of the end of time. Well, that would kind of work with melanoma there in the White House. You also mentioned Rocky and Bullwinkle. Did you watch the first episode of the new series and the Star Trek Discovery shorts? Saw the shorts. We started to watch the Rocky and Bullwinkle, but I guess we're purists or spoiled or neoliberal establishment shills or something, because it just didn't have the same magic. As far as tights, leggings are concerned, these huzzified young women showing all their attributes are a sore temptation to all of us men folks. I personally avert my eyes lest I am seized in a fit of uncontrollable sexual desire. I think that was said with Ron's tongue firmly planted in his cheek. Because, you know, that transformed wife went on and on and on about the leggings. But, you know, they make those for guys, too. They really do. And they're worn as outerwear for, again, trail running, things like that, rock climbing. And then there's football players. Why is the transformed wife not calling down a goddamn fatwa on football players for wearing them tight, 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 oh-so-tight pants when they go to play in the football? Why can't they be wearing a nice frock coat and morning suit and run around in white tie and tails catching of them pigskins and whatnot? Well, because it's all Eve's fault. Her and that conversation with that wicked water moccasin. Mm-hmm. But that did occur to me. And see, the thing is, while women wearing those Jezebel leggings may display a curve or two, well, them men's ones, you can guess a feller's religion in them. And, I mean, that's about as... But again, I quietly suspect that the transformed wife probably rather appreciates those in a very Christian way. Yes. I don't know. Robert in Australia, did your iPad battery die? My iPad battery started to fail. I bought a $20 external spare battery. I expect to get a few more years out of the iPod as a result. It could work. Could it work for the iPad? Just a thought. Well, I plugged it up. I'll tell you exactly what it did, Robert. There I was this morning, engaging in my filthy little habit. You know, Mika had the morning off after using the term butt boy yesterday on the program. And there was Joe, her new hubby, left to explain that she was gone on a long-planned family get-together. You know, because long-planned is sometime yesterday, shortly after 9 a.m. And Julius Geezer, of course, had a hissy about it. And Junior, he had his hissy after Junior had his. Because, well, Junior can't stand anything that's even remotely insulting, unless he's doing the insulting. Right. I got up and went in to make a cup of coffee. I came back, and it was just black screen. It had been playing that program, and the screen had just gone, you know, black. And it was plugged in and charging. And I pressed the power button, and it gave you that white screen with the Apple logo and everything. And then it went back to black. And then it blinked the white screen on again. And then it went to black. And then when I pulled the charger cable out of it, it just stayed off. So I really, honest to God, don't know. But I do know to have the battery replaced in that thing is something shocking and vaguely terrifying. Like I said, been a 13 the first 13 days of December have been rough for the technology here in the studio. And I said we were done with the West Virginia stories, and we pretty much are. But I think I should probably make mention of the fact that it was apparently all across the country Bomb Threat Thursday. Yeah, something tells me this isn't a bunch of cranky vegans or any of those immodest women folk. This feels a whole lot more like... the sort of things that Nazis and Klansmen and so forth do. All across the country today, dozens and dozens of businesses and public buildings were targeted by bomb threats. And even in Charleston. The capital city of West Virginia. Bomb threats were made to, of all places, a bomb threat was made to hospice care. It was also made regarding the area near the Kanawha County Public Library and Allegheny Power, as well as other locations within Charleston. But bomb threats were also received in New York, in Detroit, in San Francisco, in Oklahoma City, in Denver, and Ron's own Raleigh, North Carolina. About a year or a little more ago, the same sort of thing happened nothing blew up. Rukelt Dalbaris, a spokesman for the FBI in L.A., interviewed by Reuters, said, "We are aware of these threats being made in cities across the country. We remain in touch with our law enforcement partners. We encourage the public to remain vigilant and report suspicious activities that could represent a threat." "Curiouser and curiouser," said Alice. But then, by the way, because it sort of segues, I think, I saw a tweet from our buddy David Nywert earlier today. And it's a little bit convoluted, so bear with me. Oliver Willis, who writes, I think, over at ShareBlue Media, started it all with a tweet that said, "The New York Times writer-podcaster who did this story blocked me after I repeatedly called out the paper for coddling racists and white supremacists." So that's probably part of how we missed it, and we're talking about a headline that reads, "The Rise of Right-Wing Extremism and How We Missed It." Well, we didn't miss it. The New York Times may have missed it. The New York Times maybe didn't miss it so much as deliberately ignored it, because going all the way back to the Obama administration, when the Department of Homeland Security under Janet Napolitano issued a report that was actually commissioned and begun during the George W. Bush administration, that said the single greatest threat in the United States came from right-wing domestic terrorists, you know, your Klansmen, your skinhead, your neo-Nazis and whatnot. Well, the Republicans had a sad. Oh, it was terrible. There was all kinds of pissing and moaning. It was just horrible. Back when that report was issued, a previous orange politician, crying John Boehner, who now, incidentally, that he's free of the rigors of being a Republican suck, he's out there and he's an advocate for legalized cannabis. Must have been a pretty good gig. But nonetheless, way back when that report came out, well, John Boehner said that it was an insult to say that the greatest threat this country faced was from right-wing Republican domestic terrorists. It was an insult of American citizens who disagree with the direction Washington Democrats are taking our nation. Yes. Oh, and who was the Republican who said he didn't agree with bombing judges, but doggone it, he sure understood why somebody would. Yeah, that was a Republican, too. The Washington Post reported last month that 20 people had been killed this year in right-wing attacks. 20. And the report cited an uptick in right-wing terrorism. Right, yeah. But, of course, because the Republicans got all sad back in 2009, the Obama administration withdrew the report. Who knows? Maybe it would have saved a few of those 20 lives that have been taken by right-wing domestic terrorists this year. You might recall the name of the report was Right-Wing Extremism, Current Economic and Political Climate Fueling Resurgence in Radicalization and Recruitment. Among other things, it said, and this is a quote, right-wing extremists may be gaining new recruits by playing on their fears about several emergent issues. It also said that there were risks involved from military veterans facing significant challenges reintegrating into their communities. And that there might be the emergence of terrorist groups or lone wolf extremists capable of carrying out violent attacks. All told, they said it was the most dangerous domestic terrorism threat in the United States. And that is when the pissing and the moaning and the bawling and the braying began from the white wing in this country. Michelle Malkin, who recently cut ties with some right-wing network, she said, one of the most embarrassingly shoddy pieces of propaganda I've ever read out of DHS. Or how about Lamar Smith, who said, well, the Obama administration is awfully willing to paint law-abiding Americans, including war veterans, as extremists. A guy, a Republican from Talibandiana, who isn't in the House anymore, said it's inconceivable that right-wing veterans could pose a threat. And yeah, the Obama administration yelped like a kicked terrier and withdrew the report. Then, of course, we have the Unite the Right rally. We have the death of Heather Heyer. 20 people dead this year at the hands of right-wing killers, terrorists. And so, lo and behold, there's the New York Times. The rise of right-wing extremism and how we missed it. Well, we didn't. Because, as you know, because you listen to this program, David Nywert and I spoke extensively, both when I was at Netroots Nation in New Orleans and again later, just a couple of months back, about the deep dive that he took into right-wing violence in this country in his book, Alt-America. I highly recommend the book. I received a review copy of it, and I shared it with Boss Man Wayne. I said, I think you probably want to read this. Boss Man Wayne didn't take any convincing. It is, because David Nywert is such a fantastic journalist, it is meticulously researched. And meanwhile, there's someone writing at the New York Times Magazine who is now working on a book about how we missed it. Well, the book's already been written. And again, it's called Alt-America. Get a copy at your favorite independent bookseller, or however you need to buy books. And you will be, well, damn, you'll be more informed than the whole New York Times taken together. The New York Times, by the way, which coddles right-wingers and white-wingers and racists and so forth, people like Brett Stevens, people like David Brooks, Thomas Friedman, people whose entire careers have been made solely on the concept of looking the other way while this country descends into a toxic fascist sewer. Wait a minute, cowbell for our buddy Mark in Florida. Because I mentioned Mika calling Mike Pompeo Mohammed bin Salman's butt boy. A note came from Mark. He said, hey, by the way, Bob, did you know Mike Pompeo was first in his class at West Point? I think we've started something here. Randy in PA says, I don't get it, Bob. People actually pay for the New York Times? Well, yeah, and that supports climate change and campus rape denier Brett Stevens, among other people. And you can't hardly turn on that program that runs after My Dirty Little Morning Habit without finding his smiling face sitting there right across the desk from Stephanie Ruhle, grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. You know, because he's never Trump now. And somehow or another, that makes him trustworthy. Yeah. But, yeah, it was bomb threat day in America today. And I'm sure some Klansmen or whatnot got a real giggle out of it. Multiple U.S. law enforcement sources told Reuters that no actual explosives had surfaced in connection with any of the threats within the first hour of the scare. Well, one of these days, it won't be like that. No, it won't. But the recruiting continues. And as we'll, as most of us already know, they try to get them young. They get them in high school. For instance, and you know, this is not something I do. It's just sort of alien to me. But there's a lot of people, and it is younger people, pay attention to these YouTube personalities. And one of the biggest, if not the biggest, YouTube personality is a guy whose name is Felix Kjellberg. Felix Kjellberg. He's from Sweden. But he's known best by his YouTube account name, PewDiePie, P-E-W-D-I-E-P-I-E, with a capital P, capital D, capital P, PewDiePie. He has over 75 million subscribers on YouTube. It is, in fact, the most popular channel on YouTube, period. And most of his audience is younger. Well, at the end of a video that he put up on December the 9th, he included a tout for a YouTube channel that went by E semicolon R. He recommended it. He said, we also have ER, who does great video essays about, he did one on Death Note, which I really, really enjoyed, and provided a link. And E semicolon R immediately got 15,000 new subscribers and 70,000 new views. Well, who is E semicolon R? And he, ER posted a video essay about something called Death Note, which, again, PewDiePie really enjoyed. I feel like I'm speaking a different language and not Swedish. This is where being a geezer is a little bit of a liability. But E semicolon R said, "The truth about why this took so long is because I thought it was funny to call Black L Niglet throughout all my recordings, obviously because it's an ingenious pun, on Lawlet. I eventually got it through my thick fucking skull that YouTube's looking for any reason, so I redid all the audio to erase my speech crime, but then I got bored and put the project on pause." And later in the video, he makes a joke about the murder of Heather Heyer. And among other things, he participates on Gab, which is a right-wing cesspool for Nazis, basically. And he's engaged in discussion of what is called, in those circles, and has a history, this phrase, the Jewish question. Yeah. And he's uploaded a bunch of other anti-Semitic content. Including one from a couple of years ago that was a clip from the Cartoon Network show Steven Universe. And then it showed a slideshow of a bunch of social media and corporate media, the higher-ups. And then, you know, pointed out their Jewishness. And then used a take on the 14 words. "We must secure our existence and a future for human children." He posts Hitler jokes. Gave advice on the best way to red pill people on the Jewish question. "Pretend to joke about it until the punchline really lands." Jesus God. They really do walk among us. And they reach younger people. And the younger you reach them, the more the greater your likelihood of success. Randy in PA says, "You've got to explain someday why foxes eat shit out of a wire brush and like it." Well, foxes will eat shit. And then you have to just work with the visual, Randy. Imagine the shit in a wire brush. It's kind of prickly. And so the fox, with its little pointy snout, trying to get at the shit in the wire brush, is, by definition, going to grin. So, hence, grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. Oh, I always try to be helpful. Hey, thanks to Robert and Ron and Raleigh for. I'll try those fixes on the iPad after the program. I appreciate that. But no, I mentioned the idea of getting a violent, white-wing, Nazi, white supremacist message to young people. Because apparently that's exactly what happened to a young man in a high school in, sorry, Darlene, Southington High School in Connecticut. I warn you in advance, this is disgusting. This is hateful. It is offered not for prurient value, but because to simply talk about something like this does not provide the necessary gravitas to exactly how evil it is. This is a white teenager at Southington High School in Connecticut. I don't know his age. A name is given, but has not been confirmed. But this is what he put up. And again, I warn you, just get the children out of the room. I'm not funning. This is nasty. Okay, we had enough time. Here we go. I see a lot of sick shit on any given day preparing for this program. And it's hard to establish a continuum of just how sick this kind of stuff is. But my God, that's sick. That kid is a school shooter just waiting to happen. Now, is there an upside? Well, the superintendent of schools and the police are investigating, according to the Record Journal of Meridian, Connecticut. But please forgive me when I say I fear the damage is done. No, he hasn't murdered anybody yet. But he certainly behaves like someone more than willing so to do. And once again, I don't know how he came to be the way he is, this young kid. But you can sort of establish the parameters of the broad universe of how that sort of thing happens. There's always, it starts in the home. Heard it from mama. Heard it from daddy. Or sometimes, you know, mama and daddy do the best they can and then they send the kid off to school. And the kid's infected there like a virus. Alexander says he's a coward. He wouldn't be talking all that in the actual presence of a bunch of black folks because he knows a fatal ass-whooping would be awaiting him. Racist fucker. Well, maybe he is a coward and maybe he's not. I mean, he's a coward because if he tried to do something, I'm sure it would be from behind. And I'm sure he wouldn't do anything without being first sure that he was more heavily armed. But when I saw this story, I couldn't help sort of thinking about it in terms of all the bomb threats today and the massive uptick in right-wing domestic terrorism in this country. And that little pissant, well, he's just... Well, he would be welcomed with open arms in any number of the vast and growing white-wing domestic terrorist organizations in this country. Darlene, with an editorial note, says, "We pronounce it Southington, not like South as in Northeast and West." "I have extended family in that town," Darlene says, "and yes, that is totally shameful, disgusting, and vile." Meriden. Okay, Meriden, like the horse. And the E is a long E. Meriden. Meriden? "And yeah, I have family living there, too. This is highly embarrassing to hear." Darlene adds, "We don't need another Sandy Hook. This state couldn't handle that." Well, once again, I'm not disagreeing, Darlene, but I will cite to my cockroach rule, Mama's cockroach rule. Growing up down south, if Mother ever saw a roach, she went to war, saying one thing: if you've seen one, you've got 1,000. And I see no reason not to point toward that rule in this regard as well. You know, I'm not going to claim to have done anything nearly as important as the vital journalism that David Nywert has done. He works tirelessly to expose white-wing racism and domestic terrorism in this country. But I do make an effort with this program to point it out when I see it, because I don't ever want to do what the New York Times did. "We didn't see this coming." Horse shit. Malloy has been talking about this going back to 1987 in Forsyth County, Georgia. We were both there at that march. We didn't meet, but we were both there. When the Klan was marching. And showed up to oppose the Klan. But he's been talking about this since 1987. I've been talking about it since I came back to radio in 2003. And there is a common denominator in this. Now, while I do not know the politics of your swimming pool Patties and Target Tammies, I can say that it is highly unlikely that people doing this are coming from the left. Dylann Roof certainly was not coming from the left when he shot up Mother Emanuel. Oh, no. And Nicholas Cruz was not a left-winger when he shot up Parkland. And Adam Lanza's mama was a right-wing doomsday prepper when Adam finally shot her and then and went and did what he did at Sandy Hook. But even in 2018, after the President of the United States has described Nazis as very fine people, well, goddamn. Somehow or another, the major media institutions of this country are still tippy-toeing around the reality that this country has a violent white supremacy domestic terrorism problem and that it is not coming from the left. It's not coming from the neoliberal establishment shills. And it's not coming from the Berniacs. And it's not coming from the Hilarians. Hell, it's not even coming from the Jill Stein people. This is exclusively a right-wing, white-wing problem that will not go away because we are not apparently interested enough in making it go away. And yeah, while I've talked about a whole bunch of stuff this evening and haven't focused particularly on Julius Geezer, he is part of the problem. He is the natural extension of the problem. He is the logical nadir of the problem. And what do I mean by that? Well, he gave a truly wacky, zany interview to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda's Harris Faulkner. But previously, he's getting nervous as shit. But previously he said, no, I'm not worried about any of this, because if they tried to impeach me, the people would revolt. And we've talked on this program about his proclivity for dog whistling exactly that. All the way back to the 2016 campaign, when he suggested that NRA members would use a second, that the Second Amendment people would take care of Hillary when she came after their guns. And you know, it's truly a problem because. For instance, to compare this to an argument that I've made in regard to religion in this country, non-Christians can't fix Christianity. Republicans and such like are forever saying, you know, why won't the Muslims declare that they don't support it? When, you know, Muslims constantly are declaring that they do not support terrorism, but it's never enough for Emery and Marveline there on the matching Barca loungers with genuine Naga hide. Thank you, Randy. But I've said, you know, non-Christians can't fix Christianity. It's up to the decent Christians to declare that the Brian Fishers and the Jerry Falwell Juniors, et cetera, and Pastor Gray in California and Kenneth Copeland and that ilk are not Christians and should be driven from the midst of Christianity, that they are not participants in the saving grace of Christ Jesus. Well, the same argument obtains with America's domestic terrorism and white supremacy problem. Because, you know, the beginning, take any 12-step program, I realized I was powerless over fill-in-the-blank, and my life had become unmanageable. Step one, isn't it? Find me the Republican who is willing to say, I realized that my party had become become entirely infected by white supremacy, and we were powerless over it. Because that's where it begins. As long as Republicans in this country continue to bellyache and piss and moan every time somebody tries to send up the warning flags, every time someone tries to crank up the siren about the domestic terrorist white supremacy problem in this country, we're never going to, then the white supremacist domestic terrorists will always have some degree of cover for their evil, for their wickedness, for their bloodthirsty desire for murder, mayhem, and genocide. So, yeah. I hope I will always try to call this crap out. This evil, vicious, hateful, pernicious, racist, genocidal behavior. And there is no false there's no equivalence. A bunch of the Ron used the term a bunch of hoteps screaming their heads off outside of a metro station in Chinatown is not the same as an organization that is well put together enough to call bomb threats in all over the United States in a single day. Even if there were not bombs, the organizational ability to terrorize cities from the West Coast all the way to the East Coast and places in between suggests a profound degree of organization and ability to act in concert. There's nobody on our side that does or is doing anything like this. And for some pissant Republicans, well, what about the Antifa? Fuck you. Antifa is constantly in a response mode. The melee in Charlottesville was them responding to a bunch of armed goddamn Nazis marching through the streets with police who would not do anything to discourage that armed march. But Donald Trump, meanwhile, says if they try to impeach me, people will revolt. And he wants that message to get out to his ever shrinking base. And even at 30% or less, that is still millions of Americans who would damned well act on his commands. Jack in Shreveport with a good question, going back to PewDiePie. One wonders if PewDiePie's popularity and the money he makes could be in part bot-made and fascist-supplied. Well, they do get around, don't they? And just as a heads up, just as a warning, it's going to get hotter and it's going to get more dangerous as the walls close in on Donald Trump. And closing in, they are. Take one matter, for instance, into account. What's this? Oh, and thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Asa pointing out the bomb threats were not just a U.S. phenomenon either. The bomb threats were called in Canada as well. But the walls are closing in on Donald Trump. We know because after remaining relatively silent and seething for a day or so over the sentencing of Michael Cohen and what was said in open court and what was found by an Article III United States District Judge, he broke loose in a twoop storm today. Culminating in one two-word twoop, total witch hunt. But take this into account, please. The inclusion of American media and David Packer and the National Enquirer in a cooperation agreement with the special prosecutor, special counsel, says a lot. Because Michael Cohen had already entered his guilty plea. Pleas. Multiple pleas, two of which had to do with the payoffs to Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal at the direction of Donald Trump. American media and David Packer are cooperating, but there was no need for their cooperation because Cohen's plea was already entered. The Southern District of New York needed no further leverage against Cohen. But David Packer, who sincerely did not want to go to prison and did not want his corporation prosecuted, because, you know, there's no corporate death penalty, but we can prosecute a corporation under the criminal law of this country. And David Packer has known Donald Trump long enough to know that, unlike something that Michael Cohen once said, he would not take a bullet for Donald Trump. Because he, probably better than almost anyone else, knows that Donald Trump owes no sense of, and is cognizant of, no sense of loyalty to anyone except Donald Trump. And so the only reason and by the way, the agreement with AMI was with the Southern District of New York, by the way. So the only reason to have that is to bolster a claim against Donald Trump. Cohen needed no bolstering. But David Packer can put Donald Trump in the room with himself and Michael Cohen when they reached the agreement to pay off women, to prevent them from taking their story public and exposing Donald Trump for the sleazoid that he is. It is entirely a separate analysis to ask whether that would have mattered to the maggots anyway. Probably not.
Well, that just shows that he's a man of great charisma and he can't help himself. I think he's hot.
52% of American white women. Speaking to Reuters earlier this week, Trump said, "It's hard to impeach somebody who hasn't done anything wrong and who's created the greatest economy in the history of our country. I'm not concerned, no. I think that the people would revolt if that happened." You can find it in the... And so that was the dog whistle that if anybody comes after him for his rank and repeated violations of the law, that he wants people with guns out there in the streets. Because those are the revolting people. The deplorables. She was right all along. How about that? And then in the twoop storm today, "I never directed Michael Cohen to break the law. He was a lawyer, and he's supposed to know the law. It's called advice of counsel, and a lawyer has great liability if a mistake is made. That's why they get paid. Despite that, many campaign finance lawyers have strongly dot, dot, dot." The walls, it's getting real snug around Donald Trump. He could fire Mueller in 15 minutes, and this part of it wouldn't go away. Remember that. In open court, AMI admitted that the main reason that they made the payment to the woman that Donald Trump slept with was to keep her story out of the public eye and keep it from influencing the election. And it became an illicit campaign contribution. Watch this space as the story goes. Oh, by the way, an update courtesy of Lottie. Thank you, Lottie. I appreciate this because it goes back to something Brother Deacon Asa asked at the very beginning when we were talking about Joe Sabia. Well, since his professional reputation was fucking ruined by virtue of his hateful writings being outed, prior to his appearance as a witness against minimum wage yesterday, in a piece from the New Civil Rights Movement that Lottie sent me. "An economist and professor at San Diego State University says his blog posts, including one that called for attacks on gay sex and another that called women whores, were satirical, and says he himself is, wait for it, gay. I'm a gay man in a long-term committed relationship, and these charges of homophobia deeply hurt both me and my family." Sabia's appearance at the invitation of Republicans before a House committee hearing against a $15 minimum wage was canceled when his blog post, written between 2001 and 2003, and since deleted, surfaced. "I regret the hurtful and disrespectful language I used as a satirical college opinion writer 20 years ago, Sabia now says, adding that his current work is a more accurate representation of my more than 14-year career as an applied microeconomist. People like Joseph Sabia, need to leave the satire to the pros, because that wasn't exactly Jonathan Swift writing A Modest Proposal and talking about eating Irish children. Oh, that caused an uproar in merry old England. But it caused an uproar because it was such a skewering of English attitudes toward the Irish. And as the article that Lottie sent me points out, when he satirically said that gay sex should be taxed, well, the author of the New Civil Rights Movement says what he did say that wasn't satirical, because God knows it's been repeated time after time after time in pulpit after pulpit after pulpit, among other places. People with HIV or heart disease bear sole responsibility for their illness and should not look to the public dole for help. He wrote all of that swill, by the way, when he was a PhD candidate in economics at Cornell. Really. And what he was going to testify about yesterday, according to KPBS, according to San Diego State University, Sabia had planned at the committee hearing to cite his research showing that minimum wage hikes do not lead to higher poverty rates, but would lead to higher prices and substantial job losses. Yeah, that's more, some more of that filthy right wing. Free market miracle. Horse shit. Thanks, Lottie. Thanks a bunch. I appreciate that. And really, I'm fresh out, and by the way, the author of that article is David Badash, B-A-D-A-S-H. The subject of that article, Joseph Sabia, he can cry his crocodile tears all he wants, but the fact of the matter is, if indeed he is a gay man in a committed relationship, pleading satire is right up there with the typical Republican non-apology apology. You know, the one that begins, "I'm sorry if I offended anybody when I said fill in the blank," thereby imposing on the people he offended the burden of the offense, not on what he himself said or did. Be a little bit like Judge Nelson here in West Virginia saying, "I'm sorry if any gay couples are offended because I won't marry them." It is not an apology. So, hey, congratulations to Brother Deacon Asa for sussing that one out ahead of the rest of us. Well done, sir. Well done. Steve in New York says, "I'm going to disagree with you, maybe. You think it's possible the real reason the Republicans canceled the hearing was because he is gay and not because of his writings?" Yeah, kind of. I think when the writings, which he had tried to disappear but was not successful at, when he tried to disappear them and thought they were gone, And then they weren't. Well, at the very least, it would have made his attempts to screw poor people decidedly diminished point, because he would have been asked about nothing but those hateful writings, and all he had to fall back on was, well, I was just a young PhD student in an Ivy League school. See what I mean? Yeah. Hey, 20 minutes to go in the program. It would be great if we could get off the schneid a little further and knock some of this stuff out. $502 to go in fundraising. It'll be $702 tomorrow. And I'm not kidding when I say there are bills to pay. We're sweating them right now. But if we could, if we could take it down a little bit, it would be wonderful. PayPal button's over at headon.live. Let's run over to the stress line, if I can get the button right. Hey, welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting. Oh, wait a minute. Time out. I'm going to have to drop the damn Bluetooth again. It won't take but a second. Parking. Oh, I can only imagine what must be like to have a whole production staff. All right, then. You're connected. Go ahead.
I'm here. Are you there?
I'm here. You're there.
Right. I'm here. I hear you fine. Fine by fine. No, I just wanted to call for a second just to say this. As far as those people who make these hateful statements and stuff like that, what really gets me is one, when people say, well, I hate to say this,
but,
or I hate to do this, but, you know, I'm just going to, you know, fuck you the way you've never been fucked before, and you're going to love it. That's back the way they're feeling, except they're not saying it. That's the way I despise when, you know, when somebody says that to me, I just cut off. I said, then don't fucking say it. And turn my back on them. I've done that before.
It's probably good practice, Jim.
It is, absolutely. I'll guarantee you one thing, they'll never do it again. And I have done that. I break them right off in this house. I said, then don't fucking say it. And I just leave the area. And one more thing. Did you say that 52% of women think that Trump is hot?
No, 52% of white women in this country voted for him even after they knew he was a serial sexual assaulter.
Oh. Oh, yeah, well, I was just kind of flummoxed there because if anybody thinks...
But to be fair, after the grab 'em by the language came out,
well, you and I talked about that, and you said, Jim, that will get him more votes.
Well, yeah, white women showed up at rallies saying he can grab me by the and with an arrow pointing at their crotch. Of course, there weren't any blog posts from the reformed wife talking about how immodest that was. She's just worried about leggings.
Oh, I see. Well. You know, you were right, because I emailed you about that comment, and you hit me right back saying, nah, they love it. That'll get him even more votes. I never forget that. And it did, yeah. But anyway, anybody who thinks that Donald Trump is hot, I just assume have a rendezvous with a goat. The late Earl of Buffington, as W.C. Fields once said.
Well, I've not never felt that way about a goat, but I understand. I understand the general tenor of your assertion there, Jim.
He drowned in a vat of whiskey.
Ah, death, where is thy sting? Ah, grave, where is thy victory?
Listen, let me let you go. I don't have much to say, but I just wanted to interject that. And I hope that Brother Scott calls. He's always kind of funny. All right, you take care.
All right, take care, Jim. Have yourself a good night.
I'll try.
Bye now. It's our buddy Jim calling from up Morgantown way. You know, nothing diffuses a tense situation quite like a good W.C. Fields line. Yes, he drowned in a vat of whiskey. Men jumped in to save him, but he fought them off bravely. Ah, death, where is thy sting? Ah, grave, where is thy victory? Yeah. So, what else? If you want to watch that, I mean, I'm not going to play it because it's too late in the program and I don't have the stomach for it. But there are clips out there. If you want to watch Orange Julius Geezer lose it in front of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, I guess you're welcome to. All I said earlier was that next time any legitimate media outlet interviews him, they should probably offer him a couple of steel ball bearings to roll back and forth between his fingers in his hand, and somebody needs to ask him about the strawberries. That damn clip gets more relevant by the day. God, well, you know what I'm talking about. I trust. The Kane Mutiny. That pops right up. I mean, really. Granted, it's that immortal Bogart voice, but still, it sounds so. Eventually, from General Jack D. Ripper to Captain Queeg to God, well, they're all just going to come together in the person of Donald Trump.
No. I don't see any need of that. Now that I recall, he might have said something about mess boys, and then again he might not. I questioned so many men, and Harding was not the most reliable officer.
I'm afraid the defense has no other recourse than to produce Ensign Harding.
See, that right there is the whole Cohen thing. I had a right to depend on Michael Cohen, but he was just a low-level lawyer. He never really did anything for me.
Now, there's no need for that. I know exactly what he'll tell you. Lies. He was no different from any other officer in the wardroom. They were all disloyal.
Mm-hmm. And you hear the little steel balls clacking along? Yeah. I know what Michael Cohen did. All he did was lie. He lied to try to keep his wife and his father-in-law out of prison. I knew about all the tax evasion, but I never tended to do anything illegal. It was lies.
I tried to run the ship properly with a book, but they fought me at every turn. If the crew wanted to walk around with their shirt tails hanging out, that's all right. Let them. Take the tow line. Defective equipment, no more, no less. But they encouraged the crew to go around scoffing at me and spreading wild rumors about steaming in circles and then old Yellowstain. I was to blame for Lieutenant Merrick's incompetence and poor seamanship. Lieutenant Merrick was the perfect officer, but not Captain Queeg. Ah, but the strawberries. That's where I had them. They laughed at me and made jokes. But I proved beyond the shadow of a doubt and with geometric logic that a duplicate key to the wardrobe icebox did exist. And I'd have produced that key if they hadn't pulled the cane out of action. I know now they were only trying to protect some fellow officer. And...
Uh-huh.
And at some point, we're going to get this moment. Queeg gets going and realizes suddenly that he sound... Donald Trump is not, doesn't have this much self-awareness. But Queeg falls apart in the middle of it all.
Naturally, I can only cover these things from memory. If I've left anything out, why, just ask me specific questions and I'll be glad to answer them one by one.
And there's nothing left but the sound of those ball bearings. About 10 minutes before the hour, and there's another little piece of audio that I think maybe would be beneficial to run. Now, this guy is a comedian of sorts. He's had a long career in live television production. And it's, well, not surprising. But you know how we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for somebody to, maybe provide us with some evidence of his behavior. While producing The Apprentice. Well, here's a first-hand witness. His name is Noel Kassler. C-A-S-L-E-R. He did a stand-up on December the 1st at the, apparently at something called the Gotham Vet Show. And there's a bit of lead-in. But long about the 3-minute mark, things get kind of interesting. Here it is.
All right, they can show up looking like the Unabomber on acid and get hired. Hey, is that Tom Hanks in Castaway? Nope, that's our new IT guy, Chad. He doesn't work Mondays, by the way.
These guys know what I'm talking about, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. So I work in live television. I've done that for the last 20 years. I work in TV production in the talent departments, taking care of all the performers. It's kind of like herding cats, if cats had publicists and massive egos. I did 6 seasons of the Celebrity Apprentice finale.
Oh, yeah, you can see where this is going.
My job was taking care of the Trump family, too. Yeah, Don Jr., Omarosa, Melania. It was like a freaking Mensa meeting every day.
That by itself is just funny. Trump, Melania, Omarosa, Don Jr., Ivanka, like a Mensa meeting every day. Yeah, I know, I just repeated the line, but I wanted to emphasize it. Yeah, these people are idiots. He didn't mean that they were really members of Mensa. But then this.
I worked on a bunch of those beauty pageants he had in the 90s, too. That was a good idea. Miss Teen Universe? Yeah, that's like giving Jeffrey Dahmer a cooking show. Yeah, you got that one. Took a minute, but yeah, yeah. He would line up the girls on the side of the stage and he would inspect them, literally. He'd stick his little freaking doll fingers in their mouth and look at their teeth. So, not even kidding. This is true. He'd line them up like they're pieces of meat. He'd be like, you, you, and you, if you want to win, I'm in the penthouse suite. Come and see me. Yep. If Trump had a cooking show, they'd call it the douchebag diet. McDonald's, chocolate ice cream, and girls that look like Ivanka are all he ever eats. I really like you guys now. That's my favorite joke. I'm going to tell you one more thing I don't usually tell. I'll tell you two more things. Since you're being so nice to me. He's a speed freak. He crushes up his...
Pay attention to this. Yeah, people are laughing, but this guy's truth-telling. He is literally violating a non-disclosure agreement to tell this.
Like you guys now. That's my favorite joke. I'm going to tell you one more thing I don't usually tell. I'll tell you two more things. Since you're being so nice to me. He's a speed freak. He crushes up his Adderall and he sniffs it because he can't read, so he gets really nervous when he has to read cue cards. I'm not kidding. This is true. I had a 24-page NDA, non-disclosure agreement. I didn't know that he was becoming president. Now it's no way, dumbass. I'm telling you everything I know. So he gets nervous and he crushes up these pills. That's why he's sniffing when you see him in debates and when you see him reading. That's why he's tweeting. You know, it's like he's out of his mind. It makes sense if you think about it. Methamphetamine was invented by the Nazis to keep the fighter pilots up all night on bombing runs, right? So it makes sense that Trump would use it to hate tweet and his self-centered rage at 4 a.m. on the toilet. Right. I'm going to leave you with this. My favorite thing so far in the Trump era is when James Comey had to go to the White House and tell him about this dossier and the existence of a videotape of Trump taking a couple of showers with some Russian working girls. And it was Trump, right? So, of course, they had to be golden. All right, take a second. Trump says to Comey, "Do I look like the kind of guy that needs to pay for prostitutes?" Yeah. Yeah, you look exactly like that kind of guy. You actually look more like that kind of guy than anyone who's ever lived. They're actually changing the nickname for guys like that from Johns to Dons. You guys have been great.
Again, his name is Noel Castler. You can find it on YouTube. The title of the clip is Noel Castler 12-1-18 Gotham Vet Show. Speed freak. Jesus, how much sense does that make? A lot. A lot. A frightening amount of sense. Yeah, me too. Arnold says, I love that mofo. But unless he's just trolling America. Well, Speed freak. Man, Keed spills. And if he was a speed freak then, speed freak now. Wonder if Dr. Candyman Feelgood there, what was his name, Rodney Jackson? Wonder if he knew about the little Adderall thing. How hard is it to get medications into the White House? We're at the end of the program, but I imagine Scott in San Diego's going, wait a minute! He gets a little more Nixonian every day, he does. There was Nixon, what was he, out of his mind on barbiturates and scotch? Raving about the Jews to Henry Kissinger? And then talking to the paintings on the wall? They don't appreciate me. They don't understand me, T.R. They just don't understand. And, well, with Trump, I guess every now and then the walls probably come close to melting. And just a friendly reminder from David in South Carolina, Stan. Donald Trump's got the remote to the nukes. No kidding. And hey, a little miracle. No, just a tremendous act of kindness just happened. Earther took us down to $4.99.
And then Stephen, thank you, Stephen, took us down to 348. So tomorrow is a lot less terrifying. It'll only be 548 come tomorrow. Thank you, Stephen. I cannot thank you enough. Thank you so much. You just did a Have a Show on Me. So that pretty much you did a Have a Show on Me and have a part of another show. Thank you so very much. And now it's time to get out of here. Thanks to all of you who keep this program on the air. Thanks to each and every one of you, whether subscribers, Patreon subscribers, or people who kick in during the program. Thank you so much. It's the only way this community continues to exist. Thank you very kindly to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little exercise in conversation. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to thank you and get well to Sparky in the chat room. And thank you to midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.